Welcome to the Critical Media Studies Podcast. We're your hosts, Mike Rapici
and Barry Falk.
Dr. Rapici, good to see you again on this Tuesday evening.
Barry, Dr. Falk, good to see you, sir. How are we?
We are doing well.
Good.
The Imperial We, the Royal We,
even
the Imperial I is doing well.
Good, good. So tonight we are revisiting, though moving forward, through Jonathan Crary's 2022 book, Scorched Earth. And the plan... And
we should say we read chapter one and talked about chapter one. It's yep. Basically a three-chapter book. We talked about chapter one, and we actually had an insight. This was a landmark moment in critical media studies. We kind of reached a reversal, at least on my part. We kind of reached a reversal at the end of discussing chapter one, and we said we would want to have one more go at Crary and discuss chapter two.
Right. And so the plan is going to be to see if we can recapture some of the glory of our discussion from chapter one and bring it into chapter two. So what we're going to do is just a quick gloss of the discussion from last time. Though if you haven't heard the episode, I think Barry would agree with me that it's probably worth the listen. It was a good conversation that sort of took us through Crary and some of his arguments. And he had some really useful, and interesting, I think helpful terminology in terms of couching his argument. So the plan is to spend the first few minutes just sort of quickly glossing where we were, what we were thinking in relation to Crary.
And where we ended up in relation to his main term and
right.
His sort of mode of argument.
And then using that momentum to propel us into chapter two and to see what we can see there. So I think the central term that we really dug into was this idea of the internet complex, what he calls the internet complex, which for us is really, or as we understand it, is sort of the infrastructure behind capitalism in conjunction with the internet and how digital capitalism functions.
I just thought of it.
Yeah.
Perhaps would digital capitalism be a good synonym for the internet complex? What do you think?
I think that I look at capitalism in the way I imagine what you've just said is I see that as a verb, and there are a lot of noun components to this as well. I don't know if that, I didn't mean to go to make this a grammatical problem, but
you know, capitalism is a noun, isn't it?
His problem is that it's the practice and enactment of, and so
go ahead, use your friendly amendment. I certainly take it as a friendly amendment that the internet complex is the practice of
maybe it's best to say this way. I agree with you entirely, but there's also a verb. How's that?
Okay. Yes. Yeah, so what's the verb?
It is the action of it is the enactment of capitalism, the practice of capitalism. So anyways, he has this argument about the internet complex, what he calls the internet complex. And the very, short version of this is he argues that we need to burn it down, that capitalism, as it is being enacted on a global scale,
is burning down the planet.
Is that burning, is killing the planet.
Scorched earth of the title.
It is unsustainable, and it is going to be the end of us all.
Just add along those lines in terms of trying to give some the reader or listener some sense of the details of the book. One thing that's new in Scorched Earth that differentiates it from 24/7, although I guess there was a little of this in 24/7, but it's certainly kind of, I would say it dominates Scorched Earth, is that there's a new sort of focus on the ways in which the internet complex, as Michael was terming it, the ways in which the practice of the internet complex is literally damaging and destroying the planet. His new emphasis is on the environmental catastrophe that he feels digital capitalism internet complex is bringing upon us.
Yeah, he's this is not a purely technological
Yeah,
argument.
it's
I
not
think.
just like in 24/7, which is still a wonderful book and a wonderful description of the internet complex. There is a way in which it was a kind of phenomenology of our interactions with the internet, and that he was talking about the new time awareness or the time component. Now we have this idea of like material effects of the digital world on the planet and an awareness of that
Yeah, there's still arguments about it's not a departure from 24/7, though. He's still discuss there is still very much a temporal element to this. I think what he's
Absolutely.
doing is he's looking at, in a way you could argue that he's looking at the effects of 24/7 capitalism and saying, look what this is doing to the planet, as well as what it's doing to the human psyche.
Well said.
So anyways, I think it's important, and we've been hinting at this for the past couple minutes, that Crater's a smart fellow and he makes smart points. And but we said there are problems. That where we got to
Where we
was
got to at the end of the last episode, we said, huh.
it was basically saying there are problems. And so, the first argument, I think one of the problems, and his answer to this was, well, you can't burn it down, because you can't burn capitalism and the internet complex down, because what's left? And his argument, I think his response to that was twofold, was one, you don't have a choice, because if you don't, there will be nothing left. And two, which is sort of an addendum to one, from my perspective, is that, well, you're arguing that there's nothing left because capitalism and the internet complex is so entirely defining of your existence that you can't see
It
beyond
shrunk
it.
your brain. It shrunk
Right.
your brain. So this is
And
all you can see.
our response to that, where we left ourselves last time, was to look at the internet complex. And Barry and I spent we spent a fair bit of time trying to hash out the phrasing of this, and I still don't know that this is quite comfortable, but we argued that this is impractical on the basis that the internet complex is a pharmacon, and that we have become so, poison and the cure, it's two in the same, and that we humanity is sort of inextricably tied to the very things that Crary is arguing we need to burn down. So the problem arises when we say, well, essentially, to kill off the internet complex is to kill off humanity, not because we can't imagine it, something beyond that, but because we're one and the same thing.
Absolutely. I mean, I'll take a pass at
Yep,
that.
yep, yep, yep.
I like what you said. I would just add one or two keywords to it. So I think where we ended up is thinking about trying to think through the pharmacological idea as articulated not just by Stiegler, but also by Marx and McLuhan in a way. And saying where we ended up was, I think, feeling that Crary was insufficiently aware of a pharmacological understanding of media technology. And that has at least two consequences. Probably going to get lost by the time I get to number two, but I think I can speak to the first one fairly clearly. In that the pharmacological way of thinking about media, as articulated by Bernard Stiegler, but I think there are also echoes of this in Marx and in Marshall McLuhan. So kind of disparate thinkers, but still it's there. This idea that, like it or not, even if we are in a very, very bad pharmacon right now with the internet complex, there's a sense we have that Crary's solution is to get rid of certain kinds of technology altogether. And in fact, he's even chiding us for our inability to think
to be able to see it
technological, but yes, outside of the technological box. And so our pharmacological retort is, well and good. We may indeed be, and I think we agree, we're in a pretty nasty version of the pharmacon right now. Nonetheless, there is something ahistorical, and I'm trying to hit Crary where he lives, and in saying that there's something ahistorical in thinking that one can get at the solution by bracketing off the human and the collective potentials of the human from technology, which is always, and this is the real meaning of the pharmacon, it's always a dialectic. It's always a dialectic between poison and cure. In the new post-capitalist, and one way of thinking about this, and I'll say this, Michael, if you don't want to get on board this, I'll come and I might revise it, but you know, cowardly. But I'll say I might be a coward and revise it later. But I'll go on the record to say that even in a post-capitalist world, we would still have the problem of the pharmacon. That's one way of formulating our criticism of what Crary is doing. Maybe I'll stop right there. And I was alluding to a second point, but maybe that's all we need to talk about right now. This idea that if we have a pharmacological understanding of media, and we think that Crary doesn't, so what is our view of media? How's it different from Crary? Well, we're thinking that even in the post-capitalist world, which we might be cheering on along with Crary, but even in that world, we would still have to deal with the problem of the pharmacon, including some of the problems that Crary seems eager to bracket off or just wholeheartedly reject.
I think that's where we left off. I think that's a good stopping point to jump into the chapter two as we want to talk about it.
So we picked in chapter two, well, we don't have time to talk about this, but I do, in fairness to Jonathan Crary and his achievement in writing a book, it's hard to write a damn book. And I want to give props where props are due. We always want to do that in critical media studies. We want to be generous, Michael, don't we? Mm-hmm. We want that on our tombstone. We want that in our memorial. So, oh man, he was intellectually kind. They were intellectually kind. Okay, so let me say this. In chapter two, Crary, if there is a new ecological, environmental consciousness in Crary in chapter one, that was great to see, right? It was powerful to see. There, and a sense of the, you know, impending ecological doom that is being wrought and that is facing us as a result of the internet complex. What you get in chapter two is Jonathan Crary, the 19th century social historian. So if you're, I know there must be someone out there who's interested in Baudelaire. If so, you got to go to chapter F and two of Jonathan Crary's Scorched Earth immediately, because there's a wonderful reading of Baudelaire's ambiguous understanding and experience of Paris as exemplar in technological
memory.
And, you know, there's a lot of great social history.
But I think that is honestly, I think in a way, that's short selling it a little bit, to be honest with you.
I thought I was genuflecting at the
But I wouldn't limit it to 19th century.
Oh yeah. Okay.
I think that he does, that there was a lot in here that I found fairly compelling. I took issue with chapter one and his insistence that we have to burn the internet complex down. Because, as we discussed, because of, you know, our position and the fact that the pharmacon is front and center in our minds. But I did find his discussion here about the sort of co-opting of science. I found that very compelling. And
that continues, you're right, into the 20th century. Right?
Yes. And then
his, that begins in the 19th, but he's very carefully traces out into the 20th century.
Yeah. And so that's what I'm saying. I wouldn't say this is 19th century art,
Oh, yeah, you're right.
You know, and then his argument about, and we had discussed this earlier, but his argument about presentism and the way that the internet complex maintains its hold, its power position, hegemony, you know, how it functions is really an interesting and compelling argument. So I at least want to go on the record here as saying that though I take issue with the burn it down argument, there's a lot here that's worth thinking about.
I'm glad we both sort of lingered before I read this passage, because I think we're doing our propers to Crary, but also, you know, it's possible that when I read this passage and then we discuss it, we're going to find new sympathies. Maybe, you know, I mean, the reason we singled out this passage to read is that, full disclosure, this is a passage on social media near the end of the chapter that we're going to talk about. And full disclosure, I was encouraging Michael to discuss it in the episode, because I feel this is an example of the bad pharmacological thinking that is in the book. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's a good writer, and this is a very informed, and I agree with you, Michael, there's a way in which the historical argument kind of thickens in chapter two.
It does.
So, you know, maybe we're going to have unexpected reversals and moments of sympathy, even in the midst of our critique.
Your tombstone can say intellectually kind. Mine will say reserve the right to flip. So.
I what's your tombstone, man? All right. Shall I go? Shall
yep,
I proceed?
Yep.
Okay. This is on whatever edition one has out there in radio land or podcast land, 83 and 84. So this is Thus Spake or Thus Writes Jonathan Crary. During the last 5 years or so, I guess we should say this, and we probably already mentioned it, gave our listener, the audience, some sense of this, that he's coming out of a historical argument. And I think specifically the argument that you were mentioning, Michael, about this argument about the ways in which science and technology have become sort of intertwined, so that science is no longer science and technology is no longer technology. It's all part of the internet complex, right? The capitalist infrastructure.
But also, I think not necessarily that it's germane to this, but that it's no longer science and then technology, that it has become science and technology, that the internet complex co-opted them and merged them and sort of, I don't want to say weaponized them.
I think that's fair. I think Crary would say that's fair.
I'm a walking distraction segment now.
They're very good. But I'm going to add a distraction, but trust me, this will only be a minute or two. Just filling in what you were saying about science, something came to mind. I had a colleague who was talking about science recently, and they made this great observation. Here was the observation. They noted that among scientists that they spoke to, what increasingly becomes difficult to fund. Listen to this complaint from scientists that I heard indirectly. It very much makes Crary's point. The scientists were noting that it becomes impossible to fund recently or in recent years is this. It becomes more and more difficult to fund experiments that falsify results. That create a standard. Here's what I mean. Everyone knows enough, hopefully, about the scientific method, is that you have to run a lot of experiments to prove or disprove hypotheses. And so that one of the measures of good science, emphasis, good science, one of the measures of good science is, I've ran this experiment 10 times. I've disproved my hypothesis. I can move on now to another hypothesis. But if you're a good scientist,
you're thorough.
You're thorough. And maybe five times isn't enough. Maybe it needs to be 10 times. Maybe 10 times is even enough. In an ideal world, if you're really wanting to do pure science, you will say, it will be a more compelling claim if you say, I ran this experiment 100 times, and I know without a doubt that we need to move from hypothesis A to hypothesis B. So note, the internet complex, or whatever you call it, in this case, the university, academic university complex.
Which is a part of the internet complex.
Which is a part of the internet complex, says, hey, Mr. Scientist, don't you think? Don't you think 10's enough? Yeah. Hey, Mr. Scientist, maybe 5's enough.
Let's not rock the boat. Let's move on to the next.
Because it's all about what you just said. It's all about moving on to the invention.
So this, and this is
development.
Okay, so I'm glad we've lingered here, because this is a part of what I was trying to get to, right? Like, this is a very troubling, it's Crary. I've never read anything that he's written and felt good afterwards. But this is a very troubling but compelling argument about how the internet complex works, that we have used science as a means of accelerating production and of legitimizing production.
Absolutely. Brilliant.
And that is again, I think, and this is where, you know, again, with 24/7, that is the name of the game. And this is what Currier's arguing is problematic, is there is no such thing as indefinite or eternal acceleration. But this is the argument about science as a part of science and technology.
Yeah, exactly. Science becomes science, technology, development, right, production, mode of production. When you basically interfere, you go backwards and you say, hey, you know that scientific method that we're all so proud of?
Maybe you might basically stay back it's a little bit. It's what is used to legitimize R&D and move us forward. And that's it. Shall we move forward?
Shall we move forward? Yeah. Yes. But I think you agree. That's kind of crucial to what he's complaining about, right?
Very much.
Yeah. Okay. During the last 5 years or so, as evidence of social disintegration has become impossible to ignore. He's a cheerful guy, isn't
he? He's fun at parties, I'm sure.
Let's read that again with a proper gravity. During the last 5 years or so, as evidence of social disintegration has become impossible to ignore, there have been modifications in the oversight of mainstream commentary, mainstream media, about digital technology and social media. Basically the internet complex, right?
Yep.
Okay, well, how the mainstream media talks about, there have been changes in how the mainstream media talks about the internet complex. Okay, it has become permissible, for example, now, to discuss particular negative consequences of various ways in which we use the internet and social media.
So if I may push back, just interject for a moment, excuse me.
Please interject.
This is Crary acknowledging that the myth of the internet, that what Morozov called the net delusion, right? This idea that the internet is going to be this wonderful
democratizing,
intellectually open, share, like this is bursting that bubble. And he's saying that we've finally gotten to the point now where we can say, hey, there's problems.
In the mainstream media, it's admitting that, hey, maybe the internet complex ain't always that great.
Right.
Okay. So we got there. But is Jonathan Crary happy? Oh, no, he's not happy. However,
even though this would seem to be a step in direction of burning something down.
It's in the direct, but you hit it. It's in the direction of burning something down. But is it burning something down?
No.
And in fact, he's worried it's going to keep us from burning it down.
Yes.
That we can have. So let me continue. However, anything deleterious, I can't believe I said that properly, must be presented as remediable within the continuing operations of global systems. Now,
and that's his problem. This is sort of like, this is, he's acknowledging.
To reform it We could just reform it. We could just tweak it a little bit. It'll be okay.
So is this him acknowledging the pharmacological nature?
Well, perhaps it is. Certainly, what I'm about to read, I think, are from the headlines that I'm about to read. They do read. Let me read this.
Let me stop. Let me stop.
Return to it. But I'll return directly to your question if you read it. Okay. So moving on. And here he's quoting headlines, newspaper headlines, journal headlines. How media, he's quoting certain articles that now are, you know, coming to light in the mainstream media. Quote, how media literacy can save our plugged in world, unquote. Embrace the good and avoid the bad in a digital age, unquote. How to build a healthy relationship with technology. I love that one. Quote, raising kids to thrive in a connected world, unquote.
So he's arguing that there is now...
there are all these titles.
You can now publish and have discourse.
A pharmacological point. Argument that makes a pharmacological point that says, yes, there's poison out there, but there's cures here.
Right.
They're corrective.
Right.
Okay. It is a drug. And sure, you can misuse a drug.
Right. But if you take it properly,
it's okay.
So he's
quoting these pharmacological, what seem to be pharmacological headlines titles. Or articles, titles, right. But he's allergic to the Pharmacon, right? As he makes clear here, and I'll just read this bit and stop for your elucidation, Dr. Rapici. On the other hand, any suggestion that a livable planet, so there are these concessions. On the other hand, resuming from Crary, any suggestion that a livable planet would necessitate a radical remaking of our lives and a refusal of the products and services, the consumerist drive, right, that drive the growth and wealth of mega corporations is unacceptable in this media sphere. It's important to recognize the more menacing implications of this recent spate of seemingly balanced, i.e., dare I say it, pharmacological, balanced dialectical pharmacological formulations. Dangerous, though. Indirectly, they are a disavowal of the benign and egalitarian representations of the internet and a barely veiled warning that the internet complex, like every sphere of capitalism and late activity in late capitalism, is a competitive space occupied by a few winners and a great host of losers. The resources and benefits accessible online become defined by scarcity. That is, they are no longer immediately on hand available to anyone. Now, as indebtedness, job security, and unemployment intensify uncertainty and desperation, the revised message of the mainstream media, I threw that phrase in there, is that there are rewards obtainable on the internet, but they are on offer only to those who most fully conform to prescribed rules and market-based behaviors. Even for the diligent, of course, there is no guarantee of immunity from failure or disposability. Comments?
Yeah. So as I read this, he's saying, okay, fine, we can talk about the problems, but we can only talk about the problems using this language little sandbox.
Right.
And he's basically arguing, look, on the surface, this looks good, but this is still a very controlled narrative. It's a very controlled discourse, and it is not one that moves the needle. It's one that appeases people.
Yes.
It provides the illusion of empowerment, but it keeps all the pieces in place. And in doing so, perpetuates the complex,
right,
and I think he's arguing that it's dangerous because not only does it not move us to where we need to go, i.e. scorched earth, it placates us. It gives us the illusion that we've done something and makes us that much more docile to be manipulated and subsumed by the problem. it doesn't disrupt the power structures. It reifies the power structure.
It reifies and reaffirms them. Brilliantly said, Dr. Rapici. And I'm just going to add one little fillip there that I just know. I'm glad to read that paragraph aloud, because actually I do want to give Query more props for that final bit. So it's everything you said. You said it wonderfully. I'm going to add one thing about it that I just noticed in that, in those closing sentences. And I think I have no disagreement with him on this, on any of the points you made, or on this point. He also says that, look at this, underneath it all, this is such a pure example of the internet complex, that this discourse is not only doing all the things you said, it reproduces the most common discursive trope of capitalism, which is competition. That everything, whether it's education or the internet, everything becomes a matter of competition. There's always, in fact, his argument, and it's a really powerful argument, I don't know if I have an argument against it actually, but he says it's not the pharmacon really. I still think I'm going to make my argument that he's insufficiently cognizant of the pharmacon. But here in those last sentences, what I sense he's saying is this: it's not genuinely pharmacological. This discourse appears like a pharmacon, but it's not really. It's the old capitalist discourse of, listen, the internet is like everything else. It's like sports. It's like every other, it's like education. It's like whatever. There are winners and there are losers. And the winners are winners for a reason. And the losers, they're losers for a reason. So it's not dialectically balanced like the pharmacon. He says, no, this discourse is really reaffirming the old familiar capitalist discourse, economically driven discourse, that there's a system. You either do it well or you don't do it. There's work. You do it well or you're a loser, you know? So
I think I think sports are a good analog for this, because if you look at it, the myth of sport and competition is that on any given day, anything can happen. Right. And that's his argument. That's sort of the capitalist argument, right? That's that on any given day, you have a smartphone, you have a computer, you have access to the internet, you have access to all this stuff. And you realize that in sport, again, sports is one of many, many, you know, examples of this, right? But though we both put the same number of players on the field or on the court, not everybody has access to the same quality, the same caliber, the same, the structures are not the same, though the product looks similar. And so I think that that's right. And so the problem is for him, I think, the issue that I take with this again is that this is far too black and white of an argument that he's making. This is all or nothing. Either you burn it down or you buy in.
It's not dialectical.
No.
The pharmacon is dialectical. Now, I take his point, as you were saying, that this discourse appears to be dialectical and it's not really. I take that point. But then I would say, Jonathan, maybe you're not as dialectical as you need to be too. I mean, but you know, I'm struggling to resist him. He's a dangerous guy to argue with. He's really smart.
Yeah. I
felt you were going to say something there. I didn't mean you did.
No. I had a hiccup that wouldn't happen. The problem is that, you know, I think that if we look at media is probably, I guess the problem is he's looking at this as if the internet complex and capitalism as our mode of production is the only input output that this complex creates. He's not looking at this in terms of, well, in a way he, you know, I take that back. I was going to say he's not looking at this in terms of other flows of information and how things go. And I think the reason he makes the reason he's not is because he would argue that everything ultimately comes back to capitalism, that there is no aspect of our social applications that isn't a part of the internet complex, and that all of this fuels capitalism, right?
That is it exactly. And so what, thank you for that, because I think that's exactly it. He really does want to come back to capitalism as being the final explanation in the last instance of interpretation. And what are we, and what am I trying feebly to put in place of that? What I'm trying with a great deal of struggle, because he's such a strong interpreter, but I feel what I'm trying to put up against that idea is a Stieglerian philosophical anthropology, an understanding of, and saying the philosophical anthropology that says the techne and human are the same thing.
Yes.
That I think is the final instance and not capitalism.
Yes.
So that one would, in a post-capitalist world, I'm bracketing off the question of whether he's right to want for a post-capitalist world. I think any reader, regardless of their political, if they're a fair-minded reader and they read this book, I think at the very least, they are going to be shaken by his the force of his arguments against the ways in which the internet complex, as is implicated by capitalist technology. I think he provides, you know, one could say you're wrong, but it's a powerful case against it. But so our question, our problem isn't with his anti-capitalism.
No.
Problem is with this idea that capitalism, the last instance, explains the technological problem. And we're saying we want to think about a strand of philosophical anthropology that is a more adequate explanation of this problem in the last instance.
Yes. I think that's absolutely right. Basically, what it comes down to for me is how do we understand man's relation to tools?
Yeah, the human's relationship to tools.
Thank you. And, we seem to be kicking back at this notion that you can split them and create something.
Exactly.
Distinct.
That's the philosophical anthropology that I think Stiegler and Heidegger and Marx, ironically enough, you know, I think that they're all kind of onto. Marx and the Grundrisse is about this idea, you know, as much as Stiegler and Heidegger is this idea of, you know, the technological and the human are, you know, they're part of the same interface. Mm-hmm. The interface. Mm-hmm.
So it's really
the interface.
It's really a philosophical distinction. I mean, I don't think we're sitting here saying he's wrong. I think that if you're on our side of the philosophical fence, you say he's got really good points, but what he's asking for is simply anathema to the reality that you and I understand.
It's contrary to the reality. Right?
Yeah.
Or reductive, dare I say it? It's reducing the reality that we think, that we perceive in the situation. He's being reductive by thinking of it as a, you know, that kind of input output thing.
Yeah, no, it just doesn't work. All right. Do we do it?
I don't know if we did it.
I always feel like I have to check and see if I can still see land here. It's an interesting argument. And I think there's a lot to like here. And I also want to say that I don't think that this difference in perspective that we have from Crary makes the entirety of his argument problematic. I think there's a lot.
No, not at all.
That works and that really informs multiple perspectives.
I hope we made that clear that I think we made that clear. I hope we did that. There were a lot of arguments both in this chapter. Maybe we were more negative about the chapter last time. I don't remember.
I don't think so. I think, you know, the thing about it is
but I feel that we talked about his many strengths in this episode. I hope we did.
Yeah, I just don't think you can go scorched earth.
That's, I think, and, the scorch more earth metaphor, actually, I think maybe, you know, that's another thing. Not that if we're done, we're not going to talk anymore, but I do think that that metaphor maybe is part of the problem.
From a technological perspective.
Yeah, right, yes. Right. You can't go scorched earth, really.
If you believe in the pharmacon.
Not if you believe in the pharmacon. Scorched earth isn't really an option.
Mm-mm.
When it comes to technological problems and solutions, it's not really.
All right. Well, I'm ready to get off. I'm ready to get off this ride.
All right. I am too, Dr. Apici. But that was a good discussion, I hope. And I hope I'm curious how many of our listeners are going to say, you guys, you're talking about Crary. Crary is so good. And you're just losers talking about it. I would be very, I don't want to be called a loser, mind you, I'm going to sympathize with that response. I mean, I could see it.
Okay.
People listening to this episode say, you guys are trying too hard to push back against Mr. Crary. Mr. Crary's right. The earth is dying.
You know what it is?
It's the internet complex.
It's that so much of his argument, I think, works. But again, given the difference in philosophical perspective, it just sits uncomfortably. And so it's kind of hard to articulate where specifically the problem is. There was a lot of mental and then verbal wrangling, trying to figure out how to articulate what exactly didn't fit right.
Yeah.
So as a philosophical exercise, a thought exercise, I enjoyed it quite a bit. I just fumbled a little bit, and I'm ready to get off the Jonathan Crary ride for now.
Let's do that, Dr. Apici, and I'll thank you again for another enlightening conversation, enlivening and all these things.
Barry, have a wonderful evening. We will pick this up again soon.
You too, sir. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Critical Media Studies podcast. To find out more about the show, check out our webpage at criticalmediastudiespodcast.com.